Welcome to the final module in the Taming Your Tech Habits Masterclass. I commend you for seeing this program through to completion. Hopefully by now you've seen some progress in terms of your digital health, well-being, and productivity. In this module, we're going to explore how you can optimize your productivity. In the previous two modules, we've looked at how we can tame our digital distractions and then how we can implement some healthier habits around our technology use. And this module is really honing in on how we can leverage the technologies, productivity principles, so that we can be effective with the time that we have. As I've mentioned in previous modules, we know that our most important, yet the two non-renewable resources we have at our disposal are our time and our attention. And if we are not strict, if we are not regimented, if we are not controlling our use of technology, then digital devices can threaten both of these resources, our time and our attention. So we are going to dive into what we need to do to be effective, productive, purposeful employees. And so this really is going to get us to focus on how do we power up our productivity in a way that it stifles and, sorry, in a way that it supports and not stifles our productivity. So let's dive in. As we know, technology, as I explained in the previous module, has been intentionally designed to captivate and to capture our attention. And we are living in this attention economy. So what are some principles that we can employ? What are some strategies and realistic solutions that we can employ so that we can be effective employees? So we're going to look at three main things in this module. We're going to look at general hacks to boost your performance. Now, these are based on psychology and neuroscience, and they are research-based. The second thing we'll look at are some general, generic productivity principles. And we'll finish off with looking at some digital productivity tools, because this is where technology offers us huge advantages. There are things that technology can enable us to do that expedite processes, that speed up work tasks, that compensate for some of our human shortcomings. So this again is not about demonizing technology, but saying how can we leverage it in intentional and purposeful ways. So let's start with the first section, and that is looking at general hacks. What does the science, again, neuroscience and psychology and research-based information tell us that productive performers do? We know, and I know we dedicated a whole module to this back in module two, but sleep is so important. I cannot reiterate how critical it is. As I mentioned in module two in great detail, sleep impairs the brain, especially our prefrontal cortex. And remember from that module, this is the logical part of the brain. This is the CEO or the air traffic control system. And if we are tired, we know that this part of the brain is particularly vulnerable. Its effectiveness is indeed compromised. And this means we are often a lot more likely to succumb to weaknesses. Our impulse control center doesn't work effectively. This is why we grab chocolate and unhealthy food choices when we tend to be tired and fatigued. And the same thing is true with technology. We will succumb to the digital distractions. So if we want to be effective and productive, we need to make sure that we're getting both sufficient and, as I mentioned in module two, quality and quantity of sleep. Remember that if you're not getting enough sleep, it will really sabotage your focus and capacity. Remember that your IQ can drop by a significant amount just through 1 to 2 hours less sleep a night. So we really need to make sure we're getting sufficient sleep. We also have a fairly significant body of research that's telling us that physical activity, engaging in regular cardiovascular activity, will improve our productivity. In fact, we had a study published in the Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine that proved that exercise improved employees' productivity. They had quantitative measures and they examined people who exercised using either walking or going to the gym. And they found that there was a very clear connection between employee output and productivity and reported levels of focus and the levels of activity that they engaged in. We also know, and again, we have mentioned this in previous modules, that having unplugged what we call mind-wandering time, having the opportunity to be bored is absolutely critical. It is not wasted time. It is not idle time. We need to start as a culture Stop valuing the busy badge and start valuing unplugged time. We know that our prefrontal cortex was never designed to be plugged in and processing information all the time. So we need, in this busy world where we can be connected 24/7, where we can be tethered to technology, to carve out strict periods of time where we get to be bored. And we need to make sure that this is a valued activity. In 2012, the Intel Corporation gave employees a dedicated 4-hour period each week in their working week where they were not expected to respond to emails or attend to meetings. This tactic was deliberately employed so that their employees had the opportunity for think time. They had creative ideas and opportunities to engage in a self-directed task. Now, this resulted in some really significant findings. Many of the employees reported coming up with creative ideas and solutions. In fact, one employee was even able to develop a patent application during their 4-hour dedicated think time over the course of a few weeks. So we really need to preserve this mind-wandering state and not see it as wasted idle time. Now, whether or not you commit to 4 hours or even a shorter period, but ensuring that we have carved out time for us to be bored is critical for not only our well-being, but also for our output and productivity. We also know that happy employees are also productive employees. And we know that one of the basic human conditions, one of the conditions where we thrive, is when we have opportunities for play. Play, I believe, shouldn't be confined to childhood. It's not a notion of an activity that is restricted just to young kids. We know that when we're engaged in this play state, we release a whole lot of positive endorphins and a whole lot of other neurochemicals that help us to come up with positive ideas and creative solutions. We also know that good quality nutrition, basically, your input determines your output, and food has a direct impact on your productivity. You see, we've been using the analogy that food is your fuel, and I believe that's a misleading analogy, because the idea is that you can reliably expect the same sort of performance from your car, no matter what brand of unleaded or diesel that you'd put in your tank. But food is different. Imagine a world where you filled up at mobile petrol station and it meant avoiding all traffic, but if you filled up at BP, it meant that you'd drive no faster than 20 kilometres an hour. Would you be so cavalier about where you purchased your fuel from? I think you would. And so we need to be really, really aware that food has a really direct impact on our cognitive and physical performance. So this is why a poor decision at lunchtime or at afternoon tea time when the 3 p.m. lull hits can derail a whole entire afternoon. You see, what we feed our bodies is critical, but it's particularly critical for our brain. You see, our brain requires 20% of our energy supplies. So we need to make sure that we are not consuming unhealthy foods. Now, good quality nutrition is a program in and of itself, and it's not something I'm suggesting that I'm an expert in. But we know we need to avoid, the research tells us we need to avoid foods that basically release glucose quickly, so our high carbohydrate foods, and we need to provide more sustainable sources of energy. Sources of food that require our digestive system to work harder and to help us provide energy over a longer period of time. So just be aware of what you are eating. So there are some general, you can see, really simple things. We need to sleep, we need to be active, we need to be bored, we need to play, we need to make sure we're eating good food. Now I'd like us to move into some productivity principles, and many of these I'm sure you have heard of, but I think it's important for us to remember that these ideas have been substantiated by research and they have been proven to bolster our performance. Now I mentioned in great detail in the previous module and in the module 4 that multitasking is a myth. We cannot. Our brain is physically incapable of task switching. In fact, when we think we're multitasking, we're engaging in that continuous partial attention. Our attention is fractured and our output is significantly compromised. You may remember I mentioned that multitasking results in increased error rates. It results in increased task time because of that task switching. We also know that it hinders our cognitive performance. Information goes to the wrong part of the brain, so it doesn't go to the part of the brain responsible for memory retrieval. So we need to start making sure that we monotask, that we do one thing and we do it effectively. And this is why the module on module 4 was so critical about how can we disable digital distractions, because they are one of the chief ways that we are unable to multitask. So we really need to start building, as we've talked about previously, building a fortress around our focus, doing one task, seeing it through to completion or to a stage where we are happy, and then moving on to the next. Not having six tasks being performed simultaneously, because our output and our well-being will be compromised. We've also got ample evidence that tells us that batching is an effective productivity tool. Doing like tasks simultaneously, so consecutively I'm talking about here, not multitasking, but doing a whole lot. So for example, setting aside a period of time where you are going to batch your emails. You're going to set aside whatever works for you. Perhaps it's a 15-minute period, perhaps you need more like an hour, but a dedicated time where you engage in one task. Another productivity principle that has been substantiated by research is batching. Basically, it means that you group similar tasks, either similar in terms of their functionality or similar in terms of the location in which they need to be performed or executed, and you then complete these tasks and take care of them in one swoop. This method definitely increases your productivity because it avoids that frantic switching of gears that often happens when we go from task to task or project to project or even location to location. Instead, with batching, you can stay focused and zoned in on the tasks at hand. It will decrease your distractions and it will help you to conquer your to-do list in a more strategic way. So this means you need to batch your to-do list each day. Can you group tasks by their location? Perhaps it's tasks that need to be performed at your computer. Perhaps it needs to be tasks that are performed in a meeting room. Perhaps it's tasks in another office or in another location. Or perhaps you could group your task, and most of us tend to do the latter, and that is by functionality. Could you batch your emails? Could you set aside a dedicated period each day where you will check and respond to emails? Perhaps it's making phone calls. Perhaps it's writing content or reports. But doing similar tasks will stop that task switching and bolster your output. Similar to what I mentioned before about having mind-wandering time, we have got research that tells us that having breaks, scheduling in breaks, can actually improve our concentration and our productivity. Even though it sounds counterintuitive, we know that break time can actually improve our output. Research has shown that even taking small breaks during long tasks or throughout the day will help you to maintain a more constant level of performance. While working at a task without any breaks will lead to a decline in your performance and often results in an increase in error rates. In 2012, a Harvard Business School professor challenged a consulting group to have alternate nights where they would be completely unreachable by all technologies. Now, it was acknowledged that not all participants were happy to engage in this experiment. They actually found that the was a significant increase in employee satisfaction, and they reported that their lives were a lot more relaxed and productive just by having alternate nights without technology. Another strategy that's substantiated by scientific evidence is reducing physical clutter. Whether it is in your office, whether it's at home, we know that clutter can play a really significant role in how we feel about our work and our homes and also ourselves. Messy homes and workplaces leave us feeling anxious, helpless, and often overwhelmed. But we rarely recognize that clutter is a source of stress in our lives. But psychologists are definitely beginning to recognize this. It may sound unlikely, but we've got research evidence that shows us that outfitting an office with aesthetically pleasing elements, things like plants, furniture, personal items, can actually increase productivity by up to 15%. We know that having pictures, candles, flowers, or anything else that makes you feel good can bolster your happiness and your output. as well. So really critical that we remove the physical clutter, because it literally places extraneous demands on our brain, whether we are aware of it or not. It's often a subconscious drain on our energy and our capacity to focus. We also know, just on this as an aside, that having aspects of what we call greenery, so having plants, having screensavers with nature, can also calm the brain down. Now, I believe nothing replicates real life in the way that real green time, so real time outside in nature, can. But there is, believe it or not, studies that have shown that having aspects of what we call green time in your physical workspace will help calm your brain down and keep you in that productive state as well. Many of you, I'm sure, have heard of the Pareto principle, and it's also known as the 80-20 rule. And it's probably one of the most helpful concepts for both life and time management. This suggests that 20% of our activities will account for 80% of our results. So this is why we have to prioritize the potent. We have to make sure that those activities, those 20% activities, are scheduled in our calendar every day, if not every week, and that those opportunities, that those times, are free from distractions. We have to be intentional with our time, and we need to complete our high value tasks in our high performance times, and we need to protect these. So only you know when you're most likely to get your 20% activities performed. When is your optimal time of the day? Is it first thing in the morning? Is it just before lunch? Is it on a particular day? We really need to prioritize the potent and schedule in those activities. So knowing what your 20% activities are that will give you those results of 80%, and then making sure that we carve out time where we set do not disturb up, where we pause our inbox, where we use tools that will prohibit us from opening up other browsers. We really need to put a fortress around our focus, particularly on those tasks that we know are our 20% tasks. A similar law is called the Parkinson's law, and it's the old adage that work expands so as to fill the time available for its completion. In essence, this productivity principle means we need to set deadlines for tasks. I don't know about you, but anything that I have in my calendar, I usually adhere to. So we need to make sure that we are setting deadlines. Time, endpoints, cutoff times, commitments will really help us to have a manageable level of responsibility. We often think of stress as a negative thing, but the research actually tells us that a manageable level of self-imposed stress can actually be helpful in terms of giving us focus and helping us to meet our guidelines. This is particularly the case for long or open-ended projects or tasks. If we give ourselves a deadline for either the whole task or small components of the task, and then we stick to it, we will probably be surprised to discover just how focused and productive we can be. Another technique that has had huge success, both in terms of the research and I've personally used, is the Pomodoro technique. This was a technique developed by an Italian researcher in the 1980s, and it's based on the premise that we are not designed to work for long stretches of time. It uses the premise that we should work for roughly 25-minute periods in duration, separated by short breaks. And these intervals are named the Pomodoros. And the Pomodoro is the English word for the Italian word pomodoro, meaning tomato. And this was created after the tomato-shaped timer that the researcher Cirillo, who was a university student, who developed this technique. So using this particular technique, you need to decide on the task that you're going to do. You set a timer, and there are Pomodoro apps, there are plugins for your internet. You can use a good old-fashioned kitchen timer. The idea is that you adhere to a 25-minute period. You work on the task until your timer rings. After the timer has rung, you put a mark on a paper, or you take note that that's your first interval. Then you have a short break of no more than 3 to 5 minutes. And it's during this time, I actually suggest engaging in two things. Number one, getting up and doing something physically active, a quick short burst of activity, a walk to the water cooler, some squats, some table push-ups, maybe doing some of your desk activity that we talked about in module one, anything to give you a quick acceleration of your heart rate that'll help you refocus. Getting a quick snack might help in this time, although if you're doing the Pomodoro technique regularly, you may not want to take your 3 to 5 minute as a snack break every time. This can actually be when, if you are trying to tame your tech habits, maybe you give yourself, because it's only 3 to 5 minutes, a tech check-in opportunity. Maybe this is when you quickly check your social media, or you respond, you check with your assistant and see if there's anything urgent. Then after your 3 to 5 minutes, you go back to your Pomodoro and you do another 25-minute period and you repeat this. The idea is that you should do about 4 of these Pomodoro work periods and then you take a much longer break, a 15 to 30 minute break, and then you go back and repeat this throughout the day. Now, I admit I was quite skeptical when looking at this technique, and I really found, again, based on what we learned in the previous slide about Parkinson's law, that knowing you had a 25 minute period to get a chunk done really forced you to optimize what you were doing. So give it a go. Another strategy you may want to consider is using your ultradian rhythms. Your ultradian rhythms, and this is a slightly different technique to the Pomodoro technique, but this is where you use your body's natural cycles that take place throughout the day. And it's believed that we have ultradian rhythms of between 90 and 120 minutes. So during these cycles, we're given signals that we might be hungry, angry, or perhaps stressed out. And instead of fighting these cycles, we need to embrace them. So we should be really working in this technique, suggested in blocks of 90 minutes. Once the block of 90 minutes is up, then we take a 15-minute break to either eat, nap, go for a walk, do some sort of physical activity, and then we repeat the cycle. If you manage your energy in this way, you'll notice that you're a lot more productive because working in shorter bursts or 90-minute bursts helps to keep you feeling refreshed and energetic. Just remember, you need to be quite intuitive and quite in touch with how you are feeling. So this is not always the best strategy for people, especially if they're becoming very engrossed and focused in what they're doing. But it is an alternative to the Pomodoro technique if you don't want sort of a shorter 25-minute period. With both the Pomodoro and the ultradian rhythms, you need to find a time frame that works for you. Again, all of us are different, but working in short bursts is much more productive. Another strategy that has been proven by research is using 2-minute power tasks. Entrepreneur Steve Olensky discovered what he called the 2-minute rule. And basically, it means make the most of the small windows of time that you have, that interim period between meetings. If you arrive at a destination earlier than what you needed to do, many of us use this. And again, it's fine to use this as mind-wandering boredom time. But perhaps there's a task or an action that you can know that can be done in 2 minutes or less. If that's the case, the recommendation is that you do those tasks immediately. Completing a task straight away or actually takes less time than having to get back to it. Remember, I've talked previously about our cognitive load. If we are continually piling tasks and activities onto our mental load, we become fatigued, we become overwhelmed, and this is where we often resort to distractions. So we need to make sure that we can implement some of those power tasks. We've also got ample evidence that tells us that listening to music can bolster our productivity. Now, I need to say at the outset, not all music is created equally. The research tells us for music to help us rather than hinder us, it needs to meet 3 criteria. It needs to be relatively soft, it needs to be familiar, and it needs to be slow. Now, the whole Mozart productivity studies are actually what we call now the Mozart myth. They took a tiny bit of neuroscience and generalized the results to a broad population that weren't actually proven. You don't necessarily have to listen to Mozart when I'm saying slow. Basically, we know that binaural beats, so 2 beats at different frequencies, can help us. We also want music that works fairly closely to what we call our resting heart rate. So we want to find songs that have tempos of somewhere between 60 to 100 beats per minute. That's the average resting heartbeat, unless you're an exceptional athlete and yours could be a little different. But we want to make sure that we can find music with similar beats. Now, a study was done recently where they examined the top 10,000 songs in Spotify And they found that most common tempos are not within that resting heart rate. Most of the music that are in those popular song lists are slightly higher, between 120 and 130 beats. I don't know if you need to go counting, if I'm really honest, the beats in your music, but if you want to use music that will help you, the soft, familiar, and relatively slow. So we're talking here about fast dance music and trance music is not particularly helpful. Familiar in terms of the lyrics is something that you could play without requiring your attention to be diverted to them. We also have evidence, believe it or not, that if you want to commit something to memory, handwriting is actually a more superior task than typing. We've had numerous studies done, and it shows us that if we want to commit things to our long-term memory, we are much more likely to do this if we have handwritten notes as opposed to typing them. Now, I'm also aware that sometimes if we're taking notes in meetings, we don't want to have copious amounts of notes in paper or in notebooks, and so often typing is a much more effective, efficient way to record information. But if we are brainstorming, if we are trying to nut out a complex idea, if we are trying to come up with creative solutions, if we are rehearsing ideas for a presentation, the research is fairly substantial and fairly convincing that we are much more likely to recall it if we handwrite it. And there's a couple of reasons why. We know muscle memory is very closely tied to our capabilities of memorizing. And we also know we are much more likely to be succinct and to record essential information when we handwrite as opposed to when we type verbatim. So in the third part of this module, I'd like to talk about some digital productivity tools. Now, these are obviously in addition to some of the tools that we've already addressed in modules 4 and 5. In module 4, we really looked at some tools that will help you to prevent digital distractions. So being able to, for example, pause your inbox, turn off alerts and notifications, these are all still really relevant here. But here are some additional tools that will really help you to optimize your productivity and also your capacity to use technology. And one of the most simplest ones we can use is what we call cognitive offloading. And I've mentioned it several times throughout this masterclass, and that is that our brain has a finite processing capacity. It has a cognitive threshold or a cognitive load. And if we overload our brain, it basically shuts down. It goes into meltdown. And the problem in this digital world is that many of us are suffering from a phenomenon called infobesity. We are literally drowning in information. We now know that the average adult consumes the equivalent of 175 newspapers worth of data every single day, which is just mind-blowing. So we need to look at what we can offload. What are we carrying around in our mental load that we don't need to be storing? Because it literally is like having redundant files saved on your hard drive. If we can delete them, it allows our hard drive to focus and to work in a more optimal way. So simple things like adding events to calendars or having an online to-do list or using your CRM or a communication board. Some of the tools that I use is a board to help me with managing lists and links and prioritizing tasks is an online tool called Trello. I know other people swear by systems like Asana and look at project tools, project management tools like Monday.com. There are a wealth of these, but basically we need to find a system that works for us. So can we jot down events? And this is particularly helpful for before you go to sleep. One of the things we talked about in the sleep module was offloading or planning our tasks for the next day. So can you add events to a calendar? Can you literally write down to-do lists, or again, having a digital system to do that? One of the best note-taking apps that I particularly like is called Notability. And Notability allows you to either type or handwrite your notes, but it saves them digitally. And this again enables us to record information anywhere, anytime. Using the app, it will sync in the cloud, and so all of your data can be accessed on different devices and different platforms. Using a tool like LastPass, or there are a whole lot of other digital tools that will remember passwords for you. Using some of your valuable cognitive real estate to remember really mundane, irrelevant details like passwords is literally taking up, you know, prime opportunity in your brain. So where we can, using technology to offload some of our mental load will really help boost our productivity. This is another really simple strategy, and it is called pick up the phone. We know that only 7% of a message is conveyed through words, so don't resort to always sending a text or sending an email. We know in many situations, both professionally and personally, that complex problems, sensitive issues, and urgent messages are all good reasons to actually pick up the phone instead of crafting a message. Not only can it save a lot of time and reduce inbox or SMS clutter and that ping pong interaction, but it also, most importantly, helps to prevent miscommunication. And remember, in one of the earlier modules, we also talked about not sending emails at night and using communication platforms at night, be it, you know, an internal communication board or another communication platform. We know that at night, the logical brain switches off and the limbic system of the brain, the emotional brain, switches on. So we are a lot more likely to send messages that perhaps are a little terse, that could be miscommunicated at night, than we are any other time of the day. So always a good strategy. Picking up the phone can really stop the dreaded chain of emails. It's estimated that if instead of resorting to picking up our phone and answering emails every day, setting up an email chain, we can actually pick up the phone. It can save us about 20 minutes a day and around 120 hours a year just by implementing this one strategy alone. We also know, as I've mentioned before, batching and scheduling your digital tasks. So can you, and this is very similar to what I talked about earlier in this module, but with all of your digital tasks, can you do similar things with the software that you might require simultaneously or with an app that you use? Can you reply to all internal communication memo boards at one designated time? Can you set a time in your day, or can you schedule a time, a regular time, where you respond to emails? Completing all of your digital tasks simultaneously, again, stops that task switching and can impede our productivity. Another great strategy is to automate, and this is where technology offers us a plethora of advantages and where it is a really great functional tool. See, technology enables us to really powerfully and simply create automations, particularly for tasks that we repeat frequently or that are quite repetitive or simple tasks to complete. So for example, can we use an online calendar tool such as Calendly or even just a calendar sharing tool so that we don't have the ping pong email interactions to try and schedule a meeting or an event? Using these tools creates a one-step link. You send a colleague or a client a link to see your availability for when you want to conduct the meeting or the event, etc., and they can choose from the menu. Even setting up something as simple as canned email responses. So templated responses to email questions or email responses that you repeatedly send. Even if you want to personalize and tweak these responses, just having a template of responses can really expedite the whole email process. Having auto prediction, many of the email tools are now offering predicted text. So training your technology to actually use some predictive text for you. And this is not just a function in on your smartphone anymore. You can set up shortcuts on your keyboard. So for frequently used words, for example, that you might use in and outside of email. So for example, in word processing documents, you can set up all sorts of keyboard shortcuts as well. A great digital tool that has a huge number, it's got over 11 million users using this particular tool, is an online tool that is called If This Then That, IFTTT. And it's a way to get all of your apps and devices talking to each other. So you can build a series of steps that automate a whole lot of tasks for you. So you can see here, in this video, you can set it up. So for example, on social media, if you post to one platform, it will automatically repopulate the content and post it to another platform. For example, if you made a call on your Android phone, then a log of that call could be added to a Google spreadsheet without you having to do anything. This is particularly important if you need to log hours or client time, etc. If you added a new task to your Amazon Alexa to-do list, then it will automatically be added to your iOS Reminders app as well. There's even the option if the International Space Station passes over your house, then you can get a notification on your smartphone about it. So you can really see the simple things. For example, if you're at home and you use something like Google Home or Alexa, you can add a to-do item which will automatically be added to your workspace. So say you're using a project management tool like Asana or Trello, you can automatically have that item actioned within those particular softwares. You can do the same thing. So if you have a to-do item, and again, this works with one of the previous steps that I was talking about, that offloading. If you're trying to make, you know, a mental list or some, you know, client details after a phone call, you can have it so that it will automatically sync the data with perhaps Evernote or Google Docs spreadsheet. So you can have your to-do list also sync with your Google Calendar. So it really is a really clever, simple way to help to expedite repeatable, predictable tasks. And again, freeing you up, enabling you to spend more time, remember, on those 20% tasks that will yield those 80% of your results. And the final one, and we've talked about this in great length in modules 4 and 5, is to minimize distractions. Really empowering yourself to implement strategies where you can control how technology comes to you, and not the other way around, where you are constantly, a bit like Pavlov's salivating dogs, responding to the technology every time it beeps and draws your attention. So just go back and perhaps have a look at, is there another tool that you could use to minimize some of the distractions that are costing you? So that's it for module 6. I'm going to ask you now, if you haven't already done so, and hopefully you haven't, we're saving this right to the end, if you could go back and repeat the digital productivity and performance self-assessment. This was the online assessment we did right back at the beginning of module 4, and hopefully you can see some improvement, hopefully some incremental, perhaps some more monumental improvements in your productivity and performance based on some of the changes that I've suggested in some of these later modules. I also want you to go now and again, I know we spent module 2 looking at your sleep, but go through and just do a quick synopsis of your general well-being. Are there changes that you could make to your sleep, your activity levels, opportunities for boredom, play, and nutrition? Just a quick assessment, and perhaps pick one of those that you could change. Implement one of the ideas that I mentioned in the basic productivity principles. So maybe you want to have a go with the Pomodoro technique. Perhaps you want to have a look at using music as a way to boost your productivity. So just choose one item there. I want you to also make sure you offload one task that takes up some of your cognitive energy. So can you set up calendar reminders for important tasks? Have a go. Even if it's not using technology, writing down your to-do list the day before can really help to bolster your productivity. Have a go making one phone call in lieu of sending an email or an SMS. Have a go batching one type of digital task that you repeatedly do. And I strongly encourage you to start. If you're not already doing this with email, can you batch emails or perhaps phone calls? Set up one automation. Maybe you could have a go using canned responses, using a calendar booking tool. Perhaps you want to explore if this, then that. But setting up one automation, even if it's setting up a regular bill payment for your personal life, any of the repeatable tasks. I know some people that set up weekly grocery orders. Any type of task that you do repeatedly, could this be automated with technology? If so, set one of those up. And the final one, as we've talked about multiple times in this masterclass, and that is to remove one more digital distraction, perhaps something different to what you tried in module 4. So that's it for module 6 and for the masterclass. I really strongly commend you for getting this far, and hopefully you have seen some gains in both your health and well-being and also your productivity and performance. We will send you details on what you need to do to complete this, where you can access your certificate of completion. After you have completed the checklist here in Module 6, you will be sent to a page where you can enter your details and generate your own certificate of completion if you want some acknowledgement of the time commitment and the sort of learning tasks that were involved in this masterclass. I hope this has been helpful. I look forward to helping you in other ways learn to thrive, not just survive, in the digital world.